Banks working through COVID-19 operational risks. Welcome to the Global Risk Regulators series on banking and financial regulation. For more information about GRR, please visit www.globalriskregulator.com. In this episode, we are looking at operational risk, in particular, how banks coped with the rapid population lockdowns to stop the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic, which saw most bank staff having to work from home. In particular, we are going to explore the challenges of remote working in terms of banks maintaining compliance functions, dealing with cyber risks, the challenges dealing with paperwork, and interacting with supervisors under these conditions. We'll also discuss how all these factors will impact bank business models going forward. For this discussion, I am delighted to welcome Kerry Peacock, Head of Operations EMEA and International Head of Operations for MUFG, and also Heather Adams, a Managing Director in Accenture's Risk Practice. In response to population lockdowns due to COVID-19, banks did a remarkable job moving entire workforces covering compliance through to trading floors from massive offices to remote working. How do they do that in such a short time with minimal disruption? Kerry, what was your experience with that?
I think the main thing here is that it wasn't optional. We had to do this, which forced perhaps a lot of the things that we've been thinking about anyway, but it kind of forced the fact, which I'll come on to a little bit later on. The entire industry had to move quickly. And the real key to this was technology.
Yeah.
We have people sitting at desks in big offices throughout the city, across various locations. There's very few institutions that are literally either all in one building, or if they're in one building, that they could be 20 floors apart. So, very few people are all in the very same place. So technology is the enabler here. So to be able to make those systems available in the home space is what enabled this. Now, to do that in a secure way was absolutely key. But the technology has advanced so greatly, I think, in the last 5 years even, that the protection that we enjoy in the workplace in terms of IT security is largely available at home, depending on how you're accessing those systems. So I think that we were able to do that through technology. The workforce, as I said, we'll work on different floors, we'll work in different buildings, we'll be spread across the city, if not the world. So as MUFG, we're in three different locations. So to all intents and purposes, we're working remotely anyway. So once you get over the mental thing of, oh God, I'm not going to be in the office, but no, you can still log on to those same systems. Then might have to work in different ways. Again, we can come on to that later. But but largely, access to your technology stack is what enabled that for me. And I think alongside technology, the other critical piece, if you like, was communicating it effectively and clearly internally, making sure that everyone knew what they were doing, what they needed in terms of support, how the team was going to work. So the human element, if you like, was all about communication. The very practical element was all about technology.
This is the investment that a bank like yours has been making in technology, I guess, over several years, because I know banks have been trying to digitize. I guess this is where it kind of all really paid off, because this was kind of like an unusual emergency and a big disruption to normal ways of working.
Banks have invested. You'll have people that do days work at, do work at home anyway as part of their normal working pattern. Depending on whether that was large scale or small scale, we know that works. So all we were doing was scaling that up.
Right.
And I think that's what the industry, most banks might have, an 80% office footprint with 20% of people working from home or on holiday or off sick, but you have a certain amount of your workforce working from home. Therefore, all you're doing is scaling it up and saying, well, instead of, you know, 5% of people working from home, it's going to be 95% of people working from home.
And Heather, I mean, you do a lot of work with banks, and you probably help them with making this move sort of towards remote working. Can you tell me what you saw and what you experienced, please?
So I would definitely echo what Kerry said. I think banks are already quite extensive existing users of digital technologies, and they have made strong investments in recent years in areas around business continuity planning and security. And I think typically left banks in a really strong position. I think in particular, those that are more international in nature fared best because they're already used to working very collaboratively across geographies in a virtual way. Perhaps some of those that were more centered within the UK perhaps had a little bit more work to do around their technology, but they were able to move pretty fast. Okay. Part of that, I think, was also due to the preparedness and sophistication of a lot of the third parties that banks typically work with. You know, the partners that they have who are providing cloud services, technologies and operations staff were also able to react pretty quickly.
Now, OK, so if we look at, you know, work in areas such as trading, investment banking, compliance, these all rely heavily on teamwork, brainstorming, the sharing of ideas and so on. I just wonder, I mean, maybe this one for you, Kerry, is that team dynamic being lost at all due to remote working? And what is being done or could be done to try and sustain that team dynamic in this new environment?
Working from home, you know, does have a large number of advantages. Although, you know, everybody's situation is different, so everybody's got their own unique challenges as an individual. But yeah. I think for me, one of the key functional challenges, if you like, that we experience in working from home, it's very difficult to replace brainstorming around a table, I think.
Yeah.
It can be compensated for, but there is nothing like that face-to-face meet where you can just chuck ideas around. You can show people, and I know you can do this digitally, you know, you can show people what you're drawing on a piece of paper, etc. But, you know, physically being able to do that in the same environment is probably, to me, about the only thing that isn't quite there yet. But a lot of the processes and everything else is absolutely there. And, you know, there are functions that do have a stronger reliance on teamwork. And, you know, they've moved to Microsoft Teams or video calling, you know, WebEx, etc. But I don't think you'll ever be able to fully replace that teamwork or brainstorming. And as such, I think as we come out of where we are, you know, people talk about the new normal. I don't think we'll ever go back to how we were. But meanwhile, I don't think we'll ever stick to having, you know, 98% of our people working from home. You will have that hybrid model. And one of the key, I think one of the key functions that will be an in-office performed function, and okay, that office might be more of a remote office rather than a, you know, a centre of the city office, but that office place will be, for some of those functions, I think one of those key functions is for that. It is for that brainstorming with standing up a project, what should it look like, etc. But then the remote working gives you access to resources that you wouldn't have in the office. So there's pros and cons, but I think that that brainstorming, to me, sharing ideas, whiteboarding, at the moment, I think that is, you know, that's not optimal. I think still that personal interaction is needed.
I think the CEO of Netflix the other day was saying, making very similar comments to what you were making. So Heather, can you talk us through how other banks are facing up to this challenge of, you know, keeping the team spirit and having them work together effectively, just as they might do in a big open plan office?
Yeah, I think it's about how you use the different tools that are available. So trying to get the right balance of large and small group meetings using the online technologies and making sure that people perhaps who are more junior in a team are really confident to ping their supervisor or colleagues on an instant messenger, for example. Because I think one of the fears early on was that you would avoid that sort of office coaching where someone could walk up to another desk or tap someone on the shoulder and just ask a quick question. But I do think people are now getting more confident in using instant messenger and things like that for those. Again, for the brainstorming and workshops, we've got virtual whiteboards and we can put sticky notes on an electronic screen, but it is a little bit harder than a real in-person brainstorming around a whiteboard. I think people have also had to get really creative about the more social and networking aspects. And I think, again, there's no real replacement for going for a beer after work. But I have seen people getting quite creative around sort of those virtual social networking sessions with quizzes and treasure hunts and, you know, virtual happy hours and things like that. So there's been a good spirit, I think, in most of the banks that I've seen in terms of just trying to retain that sense of community.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. Actually, Heather, given Accenture has long been helping firms digitize, maybe you could answer this next question. Now, as we all know and referred to earlier in this conversation, banks have been very wedded to physical paperwork, at least until COVID-19 struck. So what I want to ask is, what kind of challenges have paper-based systems posed for banks and their compliance functions? And how have they been tackled with so many staff working from home?
I think steps that had already been taken were to try and replace some of the paperwork with scanning and digital copies or evidencing of things. But there are also certain areas which have had to really accelerate in terms of their digital transformation in response to recent events. A key area is really around onboarding processes. So when people want to open new accounts or take on new products and services, and many are doing that, you know, with new lending avenues available, or even, you know, needing to change some of their mortgage products or whatever as personal circumstances change, there has been a real need to make sure that people can apply for those things and get access to those things using digital channels. So it's really accelerated, I think, the movement towards being able to provide evidence in digital format. For example, one way that some organizations now verify that they're talking to a real person who is who they say are is using video. Another area that's been quite important from a compliance perspective is around surveillance and areas where you require or you typically relied on in the past quite a range of physical security controls. So typically, you know, trading floors have very restricted access, all phone lines have monitoring on them, people are not allowed to take personal mobile phones onto trading floors, those kind of things. There has had to be quite a lot of work done to actually go and put some of that technology into people's homes.
Can you talk a little bit how they've done that? Because that's really interesting because, I mean, I know the regulators have relaxed some of those reporting requirements, but nonetheless, you're absolutely right. There are all kinds of restrictions about taking in your personal mobile phone and personal devices. Obviously, if you're at home, you can't monitor that so easily. So how have from what you've seen, how have banks been dealing with that?
Most banks are now able to use digital calls. We're on a digital call now to record this. The everyday business, for those who need to use recorded lines, they have now been able to install equipment so that people can work on recorded lines from home. But I do think that there are some controls that have had to be relaxed in the sense that you will not have those physical barriers. You can require and ask people to leave their mobile phone in a separate room or whatever, but given it's all in the same house, those are the ones that have had to be relaxed. And I think it's down then to the professionalism of the employees to try and replicate the spirit of it as much as they can. And up to then the monitoring to really pick up differences. Interestingly, some of the banks we spoke to said that they're monitoring from a conduct perspective, I've noticed that people's behaviour actually improves at home.
So people really
use foul language things like that when they're working from home, which is curious.
That's for an interesting development. Maybe it's a change of environment has changed their psyche a bit. I don't know. Actually, Kerry, this is where I'd love to bring you in. You look at compliance, things like that. And of course, paperwork has always been a big part of your job. And also you have to deal with, you know, traders and people like that, making sure that they're complying with the various regulatory reporting and conduct requirements. So how have you been dealing with this at MUFG?
You're right, you know, banks have been wedded to paper. And we were talking earlier about the 2% of our staff that remained sort of in the office. Those 2% were either core technology and buildings people, or they were people who were looking after physical documentation like trade finance documentation, for example, where it is delivered by courier and there's no getting away from that. But the point was made absolutely earlier. What I think did happen and certainly happened for us is a lot of the sort of the digital agenda where we're using robotics and so on, you know, that was accelerated. You know, the scanning of documentation, if it was happening in pockets in certain teams, was done whole scale. As Japanese companies, we use a personal seal or a hanko, it's called, which is essentially a signature stamp that is absolutely physical on documents moving around the building. And we basically saw that we would do then this electronically, putting an electronic seal on it and moving the document around through electronic workflow. You know, we use robotics to scan files and to move information around, again, putting it on databases that were then accessible by staff. So, you know, it really did accelerate some of the use of robotics, some of that digitization that we see in the industry. You know, look, you know, to your point about sort of monitoring some of those controls that we see in the workplace. Again, you know, your back office could be 40 miles away from your front office. So you're not sitting next to the traders anyway, but you can still monitor what they're doing. And whether that 40 mile just happens to be at your home, or whether that 40 mile away is in an office with your other colleagues in the back office, you're still doing the same role. So I think essentially the digital agenda was accelerated. And many banks built on what they were or starting to do or have done. Everyone's at sort of different scales of evolution, if you like, in terms of the digital agenda. But what it did do, it certainly accelerated that. And wanting to keep hold of those accelerated solutions that banks are now operating under is kind of key when we do get back to the office.
Right. Okay. Actually, you could stay with me on this one, Kerry, as I'm sure you must deal a lot with supervisors. So maybe you could pick up on this one first, this question. You know, how has remote working impacted work and interaction with those supervisors, many of whom themselves, of course, are working remotely? And, you know, what new arrangements and patterns of interaction have sprung up as a result?
All financial institutions, you know, safety and soundness is the heart of everything that we do. And that includes maintaining those sort of strong lines of communication with regulators and with supervisors at any time of crisis. Yeah. And this was, if you like, the same thing, but on steroids. There was absolutely an increase in communication with regulators. It became very frequent. It became, you know, quite a very set of sort of topics that were talked about. And as I said, it became a very regular thing and very frequent. And I can imagine this was across the industry. But I think that it was what was interesting was that there was, noticed a pattern changing, if you like. At the very, very outset, the regulator was interested in the continuity of service to its customers.
Yes.
And how it and, and how it was getting the workforce mobilized, would working from home affect the service that we're providing to our customers. So the initial focus was on the physical aspects of mobilizing that workforce to be remote. Then it kind of more transitioned into, so if you like, that was the operational resilience of the company.
Okay.
It then moved more, whilst not ignoring it, but then I think more focus came to the financial resilience of the company. So what impact is COVID-19 having on business? What impact is it having on the client, on the risk profile, on liquidity, and so on? So the initial was the operational resilience, which I think then transitioned more focus on the financial resilience, notwithstanding the, you know, are operations still running smoothly? Is everything controlled? Are you doing the right things? I think that to me was the shift. But absolutely, there was, as you say, you know, regulators were working remotely themselves. But absolutely, there was no kind of vacuum at all. The communication, the frequency of communication increased, as it would during any time of crisis. And I think that interaction was valuable from both sides.
Yeah, it's just quite interesting. I was speaking to a senior central banker a few weeks ago, and even he was very impressed with the way banks have managed this transition to remote working and to manage to stay in touch with supervisors and so on. Heather, what have you seen in this area with the banks that you work with? I mean, what sort of things have you picked up on?
To echo what Kerry said, I've seen that really focused supervisory conversations continuing, and to actually enable that, the regulators made some decisions to actually cancel some of the stress testing for this year, to delay yes. some of the consultation processes, and they pushed out timelines for 52 out of their 80 planned initiatives okay. to really accommodate this. And I think that was a very practical and pragmatic response, which enabled them to really focus their efforts directly with the banks on the things that were the highest priority from a customer harm and a financial stability perspective, which I think was a very effective approach. I mean, one of the key consultation processes that is out there is around operational resilience.
Yeah, and so far banks seem to have withstood that very well.
Yes, I think the deadline for the consultation process responses has been pushed back so that lessons from the COVID experience can be factored in. But I think the timing will actually be good in terms of that being able to then feed into any policy statements that should be due to come out next year.
What are the dangers in having so many staff work at home? You know, some of them are flat sharing. So you think about potential leaking of sensitive information, getting hacked because maybe they don't have the same firewalls as you have in a bank, the potential for fraud, such as employees fiddling figures or hiding problems. And how are banks countering these threats? Of course, they had to deal with them really quickly.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area, actually. And it's quite interesting to look at in the context of how some of the trends and around threats from cyber attacks have also been maturing. So in 2019, the number of direct cyber attacks actually went down by 11% and security breaches down by 27%. What this showed is that banks actually have been investing in security and it's starting to have an effect. But what's happened then is that the attackers are moving to sort of more indirect channels to try and access data or to be able to hack organizations. And to that end, there's been a huge increase in phishing and trying to get hold of personal credentials. So the average emails that people received on Gmail, for example, during the pandemic that were of nature of phishing or malware were 18 million a day in the early months. And malicious URL hits, i.e. people hitting on sort of fake sites and things like that, increased 260% between February and March.
Yeah, that's huge.
A massive area of concern in terms of people and people's ability to keep their organization safe. Fraud research over the years has shown that when people feel disconnected from their organizations, they're much more likely to be tempted to facilitate or enable fraud. And similarly, they're much more, they're much less vigilant and could be more easily caught out by these phishing scams. But actually, we don't see people being disconnected. We see people still feeling quite connected with their organizations. So there's a bit of a balancing effect.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting because I was reading somewhere that, you know, these people do these attacks. They kind of trawling through people's LinkedIn profiles and, you know, Facebook. I mean, there's some of this stuff really is, how can I put it, they go about it in very organized ways. So I guess it's impressive that banks have managed to cope with that. Kerry, this is where maybe I could bring you in. You know, how have you been dealing with these challenges at MUFG?
The technological working environment is virtually the same as it is in the bank. So you've got the same security protocols, whether you're logging in from your home PC, when you get through to your bank's infrastructure, the security around that is the same as if you were sitting at your desk. So from a hacking perspective, I think you know that there is no real increase in risk. But exactly as we said just now, the real where we've seen an increase or where we anticipated an increase, if you like, it is that person clicking on a mail. Unknowingly, there was a big focus on information security, making sure that employees had their training, that was increased, that they got strong training, that there was regular communications on warning them about the possibility of those kind of vulnerabilities that you have where you're not constantly sort of reminded in the office place. So it was more on a very sort of information sharing basis, staff training, staff communication, reminding people how to handle potential threats, how they should work in a safe manner. If you're working in an environment with someone else at home, you know, make sure you log off your PC, don't leave anything lying around. You know, so those kind of things were just some very practical reminders to staff. And that communication continuously, you know, throughout the pandemic, that connectivity is still there. And having done that from the beginning, I think it's what staff they get used to doing now. So it was that communication, that reminder to encourage staff to raise any issues, etc.
It's just often people who are the weakness rather than the actual technology.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. It's a very good point. Actually, Kerry, just to wrap up, I'd like to get your thoughts on the post-COVID-19 world. How do you think bank business models and their operating models are going to evolve going forward?
I've been working in the city for over 40 years, putting on my suit every day, getting on the train, going to work, entering the office and coming home again. So, you know, this turns that on its head. Although I think back to a point I made earlier, you know, I don't think we will ever get to, well, not immediately. Well, I'm not sure that we would ever get to a point where we have all of the workforce not in the office space. Nevertheless, I really don't think we will ever go back to having 100% of the people working in the office. So I think we will see a hybrid model. So it sort of champions that more flexible approach, that blended approach to working. Obviously, that's going to impact the real estate requirements of companies, and will also, back to the earlier point, you know, it does accelerate that digital solution within the financial services. Who you know, as banks, I can buy a new motorbike. I can get the insurance online by putting in the registration. I can pay for it electronically. I've got all the documents in my inbox. You know, banks are behind that. So I think it will accelerate those digital solutions. It will then also lead to a workforce that gets used to or is as effective not working in the office and being able to work from home. So that footprint of banks changes. And you could see in the future, you might have a core office, a smaller office, if you like, in the city. But then you could have satellite locations, I don't know, around the M25, where people can congregate to on a regular basis to keep in touch with the company and to have those face-to-face working opportunities, etc. But then also, you know, they then work from home if that's what they want to do. But so to have sort of a smaller hub, but with some satellite locations that could be, you know, you could have two satellite locations, one main hub, but then, you know, with flexible offices, you could, you know, you could hire a flexible office working for 6 months for a particular project, and then you say goodbye to it again. So I think a more flexible approach to the real estate and a digital agenda will be what comes out of COVID when banks get back to doing business as whatever the new normal is, but along those lines.
That's a very interesting concept, the satellite offices. I mean, Heather, I'm sure at Accenture you've been giving a lot of thought to how banks might look after COVID-19 and their operating business models. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree. There will be significant change for banks and customers alike. Customer behaviours are already changing. 70% of customers are now actively using digital banking, and it was 40% pre-COVID. They're much more demanding of the banks in terms of the ability to service things online and in digital channels. And I think this will really help energise banks to drive forward digital and data-driven agendas that they'd wanted to do, where, you know, risk decisioning can use more analytics if the format is in an electronic manner, and decisions will be able to be got back quicker to customers. So I think it's really exciting.
Any final thoughts from either of you before we wrap up?
I think actually that last comment, there you go, we are entering an extremely exciting phase of banking. We've got a huge opportunity to change. It's exciting times ahead. If there's a silver lining to the cloud, this is it.
COVID seems to have been a great accelerator of trends. But anyway, well, on that very interesting note, I'd like to really thank both of you for participating in this podcast, and thank you for your very interesting thoughts and ideas. Thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. And if you would like to listen to more of our regulatory podcasts, please visit www.globalriskregulator.com. And you can also subscribe via Acast, Google Podcasts, and Apple iTunes. And finally, I'd like to wish everyone listening to stay safe and well.